Hi, everyone. This is Daniel from Space Makers and Raising Tech Healthy Humans. And I'm really excited because I get to have a conversation with Dr. Rupa Wong, who guided me in some of the information I share in my book about myopia and nearsightedness. And I really wanted to record a conversation so that you as the listeners could get benefit and actually learn a whole lot more than I could add in the book about what it might look like to set up your kids with healthy visual habits. So interestingly, the World Health Organization suggests that by 2050, 50% of the world's population might be nearsighted or myopic, which is huge. And a lot of this has to do with cultural and environmental lifestyle factors. And so in my book, I mention, as you might remember, if you've read it, that genetics play a part, and the lack of sunlight and being outdoors, as well as near work, so spending time using handheld devices, impacts myopia. And so what we're here to talk about is to find out from an expert about what this looks like in detail. So welcome, Dr. Rupa Wong. I would love you to tell us a bit about yourself to start with.
Well, thank you first so much for having me here. This is a topic very near and dear to my heart as not just a pediatric ophthalmologist, but the mother of three young children, two in elementary school, one in middle school. So this is something we battle with constantly in our own house. So a little bit about my background. I'm a board certified ophthalmologist and then did a year of extra fellowship training in pediatric ophthalmology. And I do a lot of myopia management in my practice, which is really showing parents what they can do to slow the worsening of their child's nearsightedness. I practice in Hawaii. I have my own private practice with my husband in Honolulu, Hawaii, and we have a very mixed population. It's a lot of mixed Asian children. If you've ever been to Hawaii, you know that it's everybody is 1/8 something. There's very few people that are 100% one ethnicity or another. But being Asian in and of itself is a risk factor. And so this is something that started to get on my radar when I saw all of the research being published. And you're absolutely right. It's really reaching global proportions by 2050. I think it's over 4.2 maybe billion that they predict will be nearsighted. So anything I can do to educate people, I'm happy to do.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I reached out to you because firstly, I heard you on a podcast and I know that you're a global expert in this area. So it's such a gift to have you speak to my audience and to help us make great decisions for our kids. So look, can you start by talking about what is myopia? Or nearsightedness? I know we use those terms interchangeably. And also maybe why extreme nearsightedness is actually a real issue.
That's a great opening question because I know people get so confused with nearsighted, farsighted, what's what. So myopia is the same as nearsightedness, which means that typically most people need glasses to see far away, but their up close vision is clear. Now, if you're extremely nearsighted, then even your up close vision may be affected. But what it carries with it is not just the risk of, oh, well, your child just needs thicker and thicker glasses every year. That's not so much of an issue. What's the issue is people that are even moderately nearsighted, a -3 to -6, and that's not a really large number. They carry with them a higher risk of a lot of sight-threatening eye complications, things like cataracts, glaucoma, myopic maculopathy. You know, these are things, retinal detachments, tears. These are things that are potentially blinding. And the reason for that is when someone is nearsighted, most typically their eyeball is elongated. That's the reason that the image that you're seeing is focused just a bit in front of the retina instead of on the retina. That's why things are blurry in the distance. And the reason for that is because the eyeball is stretched a little bit longer. So when we measure the length of nearsighted individuals' eyeballs, they're longer than people who are not nearsighted. And that length, that elongation, stretches the retina, stretches the sclera, and that's what causes a host of vision-threatening problems.
Yeah. And I read a statistic, and obviously you'll be able to correct me if I'm incorrect, but that if people have extreme myopia, There is, I think it was a 90% chance of having, well, not blind, or either blindness or significant visual impairment by the time they reach 70 years old. Is that correct?
Well, it depends on the place. So there, it is being myopic and having significant visual impairment in China. Certain conditions are the second, third most common reason for having visual loss. In Japan, myopic maculopathy is the first reason for having, first cause for visual loss in this particular city, Tajimi City in Japan. So it depends. I don't know about the 90%, but certainly a very large percentage. And that's why it's so problematic. That's why it's affecting so many children. And eventually, these problems with the vision, they don't happen until typically age 65 and above. So we're trying to protect our children now so that they can have a lifetime of healthy vision, much like we do sunscreen for our children, right? Because when they are exposed to the sun, that increases the risk of skin cancer down the road. It's not that they're going to get skin cancer at age 7 or 10, but down the road. So that's the same type of thing we're doing with nearsightedness prevention and all these things that we're talking about today with screens.
That's a great example. It's so hard, isn't it? As a parent, you've got so much going on. You're just trying to deal with, I don't know, either nappies if they're really young or getting the kids lunches or even just getting their clothes on, you know, and at the same time, we want to make good decisions for their visual health so that when they're 60 and 70, they can turn around and go, wow, I can see the world because of the choices you made. This is where it's a hard thing, isn't it? And it's probably a hard message to get over to parents.
It's very hard. And I think it's also filled with a lot of parent guilt because many times, you know, we do what we need to survive as parents. You know, I'm being a parent of three children. And if I'm trying to work from home, it can be really challenging when they are just coming up at you. And it is easiest to hand them a screen, 100%, no doubt about it. And so I think there's a lot of parent guilt associated with this specific topic, which is why I always say, you know, it's really not about shaming anyone. It's just about laying out the research as we know it, the recommendations as we know it, and then you do what you need to and what works with your family. You create your own guidelines for what works in your home, given all of this.
So I want to talk about some of the factors that impact myopia and then obviously what we can do as parents in order to help that. So I know that genetics, and I understand that outdoor time and light, and obviously near work with screens can impact visual health. Let's start with maybe genetics and then outdoor time, and then we'll spend a bit of time on screens. But would you mind giving us your expert knowledge about the factors that impact myopia?
So the genetics is a tricky one because there is certainly a genetic component. But it's not one-to-one, and it's been very difficult to tease apart because the environmental and the lifestyle factors also weigh so heavily, and siblings tend to be raised in the same household. So if it's a household where academic rigor is emphasized, then they might be doing a lot of studying, all the siblings. So it tends to be a little bit challenging to tease it apart. The gene studies, I mean, they have identified over 200 gene loci for myopia, but when they look at it, it's easier to look at high myopia, high nearsightedness, and they've been able to isolate those genes better. But in general, what I tell parents is if both parents are nearsighted, there's about a 1 in 2 chance that your child will be nearsighted. If only one parent is nearsighted, it's about a 1 in 3 chance. And if neither parent is nearsighted, there's still a 1 in 4 chance that your child is nearsighted, which speaks to these environmental risk factors. And then the other things that we are concerned about, and we actually have different categorizations for people that are kids that are at higher risk, depending on these other additional factors. So genetics is one, East Asian ethnicity is another. So parental myopia, East Asian ethnicity, time spent outdoors. That's a big one. So several studies in Australia, in China, in Denmark, all across different ethnicities, different latitudes, longitudes, right? All of them have shown the benefit of increased outdoor time at slowing the worsening of nearsightedness. So when I'm talking about this with kids, it's if you're nearsighted, you probably remember when you went to the eye doctor every year, the glasses prescription got worse and worse. So that's what we are hoping to slow down. We can't necessarily reverse it, but by implementing some of these lifestyle modifications, we can slow it down. So spending at least 2 hours a day outdoors has been shown in all of these studies to be beneficial and protective in that way. And kids don't even need to be doing something specific. It's not dependent on physical activity, because when they compared indoor sports versus indoor sports activity was not protective at all. Just sitting outside is good enough. Just walking outside, you know, from classroom to classroom was looked at in China, where they used little light meters and evaluated exactly how many lux the children were receiving. So I think that's really important, because I think some parents are, well, she's not really into sports, or he's not really into like basketball or this. It doesn't need to be that. I really tell my children, go sit outside on our patio and do whatever you want to do. If you need to read and do your homework, that's fine. But I want them to get that outdoor time. And that's really, really helpful. And then, of course, the other risk factor is near work, which I know we're going to dive deep into.
No, that's fantastic. So with outdoor time, is it about the sunlight, or is it that we're not sure what it is?
We're not 100% sure exactly what it is, but the thought is that it is about the sunlight, that it has to do with dopamine, because even in the genes that they have isolated for myopia, it has to do with dopamine and the transmission and the synaptic cell-to-cell transmission of dopamine. So that's the cascade that they think is responsible for the outdoor time. And they just have shown more outdoor time is better. And that doesn't mean, though, that children need to go without sunglasses, hats, or sun protective clothing, because I get that question a lot. Should they not wear sunglasses? 100% wear their sunglasses and still go outside and get the benefits of it. But they're not 100%. They haven't really figured out this specific cascade that the outdoor time is affecting, but it may or may not be separate from vitamin D in and of itself.
Fascinating. So look, in terms of summarizing where we've gotten to so far, what I've heard is that there are some factors that we need to be particularly careful with. I'm thinking, you know, if I'm a parent and I'm nearsighted, or my partner's nearsighted, well, then obviously my child is more likely to be nearsighted. Therefore, I have to be a bit more proactive in terms of these recommendations. Being outdoors is really important. So sending your kids outdoors, even if they're not exercising, but even if they're outside, I mean, possibly even watching screens or reading a book, it's better than being inside to a certain degree for their visual health in terms of myopia. And the other one is, you know, let's say ethnicity. When you say East Asian, so do you mean Asian? And so for us, Asia is, you know, China, Southeast Asia, Vietnam, etc. Do you mean East as in Middle Eastern, or do you mean Southeast Asia?
So when Americans say East Asian, we mean not Indian Asian, and not, okay. So it's been really shown in China, Japan, Singapore, Taiwan, that ethnicity.
Great.
Has been
Thank
shown
you.
To be.
I'm glad I clarified, because in Australia, yes, we talk about Indians.
You don't use that terminology. And then Asians. I know in England, everybody's Asian, but they don't really use that here.
I'm glad I checked. So look, I'm half Chinese. My dad's from Shanghai. And so, you know, obviously that puts me
at risk.
So I remember you talking about Asian eyes, and so in that sense, it's more of a risk if you come from those countries or you have the genetics. And that's really helpful as well. Yeah, obviously the genetics. Okay. So with that in mind, let's talk about near work, and far work, and how screens can, which, you know, are clearly a lifestyle choice, impact risk factors for myopia and extreme myopia.
So that's just the really interesting thing with near work and nearsightedness. It's, you know, this association has been known for over 100 years. I actually even found an article from 1930 written by a physician and saying how to slow children's nearsightedness, get them outdoors. They even recommended it back then. Stop reading so much. And, you know, we really do think that the visual demand of concentrating up close on tasks such as reading, writing, and studying are thought to be a driving force of nearsightedness in kids. And so there have been over 400 studies and reviews examining this association. And one thing that they tend to do in a lot of these studies is use level of education as a marker for near work. So they'll find that, the percentage of people who have completed university or other higher education Well, the percentage of them, 30%, 29.5 are myopic versus those only 12% of those who did not complete secondary school. So it does seem to be related to education, and every year of education actually makes you more myopic. So that's it. Of course, we're not going to tell our children not to attain education.
There's the solution, kids and parents, no more school.
But we're going to control the things that we can control. So near work is likely independently associated with myopia, but there have been a lot of inconsistent results just because the parameters used to quantify near work, like I said, they tend to use like education as kind of a stand-in for the hours. But when you look at, I was talking about these specific Asian countries, the myopia epidemic in China, Taiwan, Singapore, it's the highest in the world. 80% of high school seniors in Singapore are myopic. And it's thought to be because of after school, they are going to, from tutoring session to tutoring session, the academic rigor, the emphasis on early educational achievements, the longer hours spent studying seem to be the problem, because they even did one study where they looked at Chinese children in Australia versus Chinese children in China, and they didn't see as much myopia in the Australian kids. So it's, again, not just genes. There are these things we can control.
Fascinating. And so tell me, why does looking at a screen close up, what does it do to your eyes? Like, why is that impacting, why does it lead to myopia?
So that's the thing with the screens, because what we worry about is that they are held close for sustained periods of time. And the concern is that the working distance is less. So anything less than, 20 or 30 centimeters, and the continuous near work activities. So I don't know about your children. My kids now will read a book for hours on end, but when they were 2, 3, 5, 7, they're not going to read for or write or do something else that's near work related for more than 30 minutes, but they will hold a phone or a tablet and be watching, YouTube or whatever else it is for longer than that period of time. So, and that's where it's the recommendations kind of come into place, because kids can get so engrossed in screens at a very young age. And we're finding that these risk factors, these lifestyle risk factors, they impact the younger children more than the older children.
Mm-hmm. And I remember reading a study or a number of studies about lockdown. And finding that the younger the age, when kids are in lockdown doing more online learning and obviously being indoors, the more likely they were to develop myopia as a result. I imagine because of neuroplasticity and how much the brain is developing at, for a 6-year-old compared to an 8-year-old compared to a 12-year-old. And therefore, the age does matter, which is part of the messaging in my book. Did you want to speak to that?
Yes, absolutely. And that was such a fascinating study, because everybody was worried about it with lockdown, right? And the kids on screens and Zooms for 6 months or a year at a time. And they were able to look at the calendar year from January to January in China, where their school year runs January to January, unlike here in the States where it doesn't. So they really were able to look at, these kids were in lockdown, on home confinement, doing distance learning for the full 12 months. And they found that the 6-year-olds had a 3 times increase in myopia, the 8-year-olds a 1.4 times increase. And then the really interesting thing was the 9 to 13-year-olds did not have an increase. So the conjecture was, well, 9 to 13-year-olds may already be utilizing devices and screens, computers, laptops, et cetera, by that age. So it did not, lockdown and home confinement didn't represent a marked change in their visual behavior. But for young kids, kindergartners and first graders typically aren't on devices in school that often. It's more interaction, more, physical play, more interaction with blocks and the teacher. And so this was a really big difference for these younger kids. And that's what I think is really, that's really speaks to the importance of just monitoring the age of the children. Because yes, I agree. I think it's very impactful. And that's where it's easier to give a screen to a young child because they can't occupy themselves anyway else, but it can also be more problematic.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, let's look at solutions. Okay, so we know that we need to get the kids outdoors, and we know, well, we can't do anything about our genetics, but we need to get the kids outdoors. We want them to, you know, obviously use screens, but maybe watch them from a distance instead of close up if we can. I'm assuming you'll talk about that, and other things. So tell me, we're a parent, and we're concerned about myopia, or our child actually has been diagnosed with myopia or nearsightedness, and we want to reduce the progression towards severe myopia. What do we do?
So it's a great question, because let's just sum it into actionable strategies, because that's what I like to, the take homes. And I do want to point out that it's not anything specific about a screen that's worrisome. I know there was a lot of interest in blue light glasses, blue light blocking glasses when the pandemic started. The blue light that's emitted from phones, computer screens, tablets is significantly less than the blue light you encounter from the sun. So it's not the blue light that's causing the nearsightedness. It's the working distance and the amount of time that children are spending the continuous near work activity. So what can we do? Well, first, yes, absolutely. If you can get things so that it's more of a distance target. So when my child is playing on his, I think he has a Switch, which we just bought during the pandemic. He does it. He knows he has to set it up on the TV. I don't want him on the tiny little console 18 centimeters away from his face. And even that was another study where they showed the kids who were during home confinement doing distance learning, but they used projectors or even TVs, were less nearsighted than the ones that were doing it on computers and tablets. So that does speak to, all right, let's try to get them at least then off of this really close working distance and to a further thing. So my children watch TV on TVs, or even if they're just watching, you know, they AirPlay everything with their Apple devices. So I want them on a distance target. If they are doing near work, and I know that it's so important. Obviously, we want our children to read. We want them to write. They need their devices for school. All three of my kids have devices for school given to them by the school. My elementary school kids have iPads. My middle schooler has a laptop and everything. They don't even have textbooks anymore. It's all on screens. His algebra homework is on screen. I've asked for printed handouts and I have not received them. They won't do it. They're like, what are you talking about? So it's everything's on screen. So what do you do about that? Well, so I try to then limit the amount of recreational screen time that my children get during the week, because I already know they're on screens a lot. They're doing a ton of near work activity constantly. So let's limit the recreational. So my children get screen time on the weekends. When they are doing near work, incorporate breaks every 30 minutes. That's been found to be protective for children. And that's just going to allow, you know, they're to have a little bit of a time where they're not focusing, where their eyes can reset, they can have a little less muscle fatigue and eye strain. So I think that's a very important thing to do as well, because it's not just about the specific duration, it's about the intensity of the near work. So as many of those things as you can incorporate in your home life, I think is really important. We also have screen-free zones and screen-free times, and that's an agreement. I printed out a little agreement. We do it with my children. We've completed it. Where do you think we should have screens? How many hours do you think you should have? What chores do you think you need to do before you get your screen time? So those are things that I've done alongside my child so that we've created things that work. So it's not just rules that I'm handing down to my children, because they're 9, 11, and 13. So I could maybe hand down rules when they were young, but I can't do that now.
Yeah. And it's a bit of a dance, which is, you know, why I wrote my book in the first place, to give guidance and support for all those kind of challenges as we experience as parents. It was fascinating after that first conversation I had with you as I was researching the book. I just went for a walk and I started to think about, you know, if I was a caveman and, you know, in terms of my eye development, where would my eyes be focusing? And I realized that actually my eyes are looking at trees and my eyes are looking at human beings. And, you know, like, unless it's my intimate lover, I'm not going to be staring at them, you know, the distance I hold my iPhone. And even then, I'm not going to stare in their eyes for 4 hours at a time.
Right.
And I thought, oh, no wonder this is impacting our eyes, because our eyes were never developed to have this near kind of visual focus for so long in such a repetitive way. And no wonder it's impacting our brain, making us feel tired, giving us eye strain and eye fatigue. And ultimately, for young people, as their brains are developing and their eyes are developing, no wonder that's actually reducing the health of their eyes. And therefore, how do we, which is what I say in all my books, make space to unplug, to create spaces where we're looking at a distance or we're experiencing life unplugged, where we're experiencing humanity in all its fullness, rather than just constantly looking at one thing on a device.
Absolutely. It's, I mean, there's just so many, and I'm just speaking to the visual implications, right, of being on screens. But I know in your books, you talk about all of the other ramifications, and especially for children. I mean, the evolution of our bodies has not caught up with modern lifestyles. So our brains, our eyes, everything is wired to still interact in a 3D environment. I mean, the amount of digital advancement, technological advancement in the last 50 years, evolution doesn't work that fast. So our bodies aren't wired that way yet.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And look, I'm sure we could talk for hours.
But oh,
we,
yes.
We won't have the time. look, I know that there'll be parents who are really interested in this, either because they need to or because they're just passionate about this subject themselves. You have some fantastic online resources and actually a course that parents can go to and find out more and actually be really guided in a deeper way. Can you tell me about that course and where parents will find it?
Sure. So I created this course because I was getting so many messages. I have large social media platforms from parents who were not being told by their eye doctors as to how to start implementing these strategies at home. So it's called Preventing Nearsightedness in Kids. And it's a very, just very niche specific, very targeted course for the parents who are interested in slowing their child's nearsightedness, who want to really take a proactive approach to their child's myopia. And in it, we cover the what myopia is, what are the ocular health consequences of it, and then the lifestyle modifications, really going into detail. I have workbooks, as well as the actual treatment strategies that eye doctors can prescribe, such as peripheral defocus contact lenses, overnight contact lenses, low-dose atropine drops. So I get into the research behind all of those just so that parents feel I'm not taking the place of their own child's eye doctor, but so that the parents feel like they have the foundation of knowledge to be able to be their child's advocate at their eye doctor's appointment. So they can say, oh, I read about this. I think this would be great for my child. Can you tell me, can we start this? Can you tell me pros and cons? So we go through all of that. And then I actually have monthly office hours, live office hours, where I can answer questions like this. What do you recommend? I can't give specific medical advice, but we do medical education. And I think that that's really probably the best part of it for a lot of these parents, because across the world, everyone is looking at different studies. They're not really sure. So I think it's just a really neat way to create this community and also just give this level of education to all parents.
Great. Look, that is fantastic. Can you give me the URL?
Sure.
I will include it in the notes, but it's still useful to have.
Yes, it is Dr. Rupa Wong. So drrupawong.com/preventing-nearsightedness. And if you just even go to my drrupawong.com website, there's a big orange button up at the top that says nearsightedness course. You can't remember all of that. I'm obviously married to someone of Chinese ethnicity. He's fifth generation Chinese American. And so that is why all three of my children are on these treatment strategies. They're on low dose atropine. I'm very careful about their outdoor time and their screen time because I see the risks in my in-laws and their nearsightedness and their retinal detachments.
Mm. Look, I love your passion. I love that you speak and give your time to help people all around the world understand this important message. And I'm very grateful that you were able to speak into my book and give me the guidance that I needed to be able to educate people as well. So thank you so much for your time, Dr. Wong. And it's been an absolute pleasure to have you speak to us.
Thank you so much for having me. I love talking about this topic, and I really commend you on all that you are doing so that we can raise children unplugged.